to PRN.fm.
Hello, everybody. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley. The program is Love, Lust, and Laughter. My guest today is Dr. Mark Schoen. He's a sex educator and a filmmaker and a longtime friend. Hello, Mark. Nice to have you back on the program.
Hello, Diana. It's good to be here.
Great. And we're going to talk about three main areas, internet and sex education, your company Sex Smart Films, and your documentary Love After War. So we're going to, in this next hour, stay tuned because you'll want to hear about these important areas. Let's start, Mark, with the internet and sex education, because so many young people are getting their sex education on the internet, and then what happens?
Well, back in the day, and I'm going to show my age now.
Yep.
When I remember first wanting to learn about sex, so mm-hmm. I went to the library and looked in the card catalog, which
yep.
doesn't exist anymore. And I looked up sex.
Remember it well.
And I found some books that mostly had anatomical drawings that I could hardly understand what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, children the same age today don't go to the library. They go to the internet. And they yeah. look up sex. And what do they get? They get adult films, pornographic
yeah.
films. And for many of them, that's their first education. And for a large majority of them, that's their only sex education. So I know people who are producers of adult film, and I know for a fact they do not produce them to educate 11-year-olds.
Right, exactly.
So...
And these poor 11-year-olds are really confused. I have younger people in my practice, meaning people in their late 20s and 30s, who had access to pornography on the internet when they were teenagers, and it carries over, and they often don't have a very good sex life because of the misinformation they got. What are some of the high points of from your experience of the misinformation that people get by watching porn?
Well,
kids get this.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I think, a good way to look at this is look at some of the European countries, in particular the Scandinavian countries, where they
yes.
have compulsory, comprehensive sexuality education beginning in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I went to graduate school in Sweden, and I remember mm-hmm. attending a class, and the kids were in sex education, and they were sitting there like they were taking a math class. It was
mm-hmm.
a matter of fact, and they took it all in and learned. And if you look at the WHO, the World Health Organization statistics on HIV and teen pregnancy, and compare these European countries, in particular Sweden, to the United States, our rates are 3 to 6 times higher. And we don't do sex education. In fact, some places we do abstinence-only education, which we know doesn't work. So, the internet can be a great educational tool, but many adults don't allow their kids to see instructional films dealing with sex education. So the kids go on their own and they get to the adult films on the internet. And those films are not made to educate. They're made to titillate. They're made to entertain.
Yes.
So, I think it's a real problem, that we don't educate our children at an early age. And there are so many, you know, factors to see how it works. I mean, personally, I did a documentary on transgender, and in the month of May, there here in Washington, D.C., they have a transgender month where they do things to educate people and about, and they showed my documentary. And after the film was shown, a family, a mother, a father, and a little girl came up to me and introduced themselves. And they said, this little girl was in my grandson's class in school. And the little girl, who is 7 years old, was a biological boy who was dressed as a girl. And I learned that the school administration has accepted her, the teachers have accepted her, and they have explained to the class. So I went home, and I saw my grandson, and I said, is so-and-so in your class? And he said, yeah. And I said, did you know she was transgender? And he said, yeah. Like, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal?
And to think, you know, here he was, he learned about this when he was probably 6 years old, and he's not passing any judgment. So,
right.
You know, I think between the European comprehensive sexuality education and incidents like this, where you see the children aren't the problem to get this kind of education. It's the adults who we as children were taught very well that sex is something we're not supposed to talk about. And we learned that lesson. And have followed.
You know, the research has shown that parents who talk about sex with their kids, the kids are then more likely to share their values. I was incredibly lucky because back in the 50s, on a car trip from Santa Barbara to Los Angeles where we lived, my father started the sex education talk, and my mother would come in on menstruation and all of that. And I remember my mother, I was just shocked when I heard about the penis going into the vagina and how that would potentially create a baby. And so I'm looking out the window. Who knew I'd become a sex therapist one day? And my mother said, Diana, stop looking out the window. This is a beautiful thing. And, of course, the caveat from my mother and father was, when you're married. But, you know, still, they were talking about it. And they were very demonstrative and affectionate in front of us. So I got a really good start sex education.
You were very lucky. And your parents followed Saul Gordon. Saul Gordon was an old-time sex educator, and he had a motto.
I took his course back on teenage educating. Well, anyway, go ahead. Yes, I remember him very well. He was a lovely man. And funny.
He would tell parents, he said, you need to be an askable parent. You need to create an atmosphere at home where your children are comfortable asking and talking to you about sexuality. So you need to lay the groundwork.
Yeah, that's so important to be an askable parent. And I certainly was with my children. And there isn't much need now since they're so much older. But to be an askable parent and to look for opportunities where there might be some value in talking about something sexual. For instance, I still have a memory of this. I don't know how. But when I was 4 years old, I remember seeing, I was walking with my mother. I had my hand in hers. And I said, oh, Mommy, look at that fat lady. And my mother said, no, Diana, she's not fat. She's pregnant. She's carrying a baby inside. So that provided an opportunity for some sort of sex education, and that was good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And appropriate for my age, too. But what are we going to do about this? Well, I know what you do about this. You provide sex smart films, and we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
But kids, yes.
I was going to say one of the things that they have in Scandinavian countries, and we're starting to get that more here, are books and videos that are targeting young children that are age appropriate and dealing with sexuality.
And you have an excellent one on your website. I've mentioned this, well, I've sent lots of clients to your website, Sex Smart Films. But you have a great film, an animated film, Belly Buttons Are Navels.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
Belly Buttons Are Navels is based on a book called Belly Buttons Are Navels, which, by the way, is still available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Belly Buttons Are Navels is a book that is about body parts from head
uh-huh.
to toe, including the genitals. So
mm-hmm.
it's not a sex book. It just identifies the accurate names. And I remember what motivated me back in when I graduated from undergraduate school. I became a health education teacher, and I was teaching sex education, and we were talking about the body parts in the room, and I went around the room and I said, what is the name you use for your genitals at home? And there were about 25 kids in the room, and I think there were 20 different names, you know, and no one used, you know, no one said penis, vulva, clitoris, testicles, vagina. So that was motivated to make an instructional tool, a book and a video that taught children accurate names for body parts.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then how did your students? How did they respond? Or did you get to show that, or that just was the inspiration?
Yeah. Well, that
got you going.
Inspiration, but a funny story. When the book came out, Mary Calderon, who was the executive director of CECAS, she was an MD. She loved the book and wrote the foreword to it, and she got her agent to try to get the book published. And the publisher, whose name I forget, but they were the publisher of the Dr. Seuss children's book,
mm-hmm.
wanted to publish the book. But they said I had to remove one word. And the word they wanted me to clitoris.
Oh, no.
Yes. They asked it to you. And I remember Mary Calderon calling me and said, Mark, if you remove the word clitoris, you're going to have to answer to me. So, needless to say, I did not remove that word. And it did get published by a smaller publisher. And as I said, it's still available in paperback now on Amazon.com.
Part of my work is also a sex, besides being a sex therapist, a sex educator. And so sometimes I will say to my clients, you know, the clitoris has 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers, and its only job in your body is for pleasure. The penis has about 4,000 nerve fibers, and as we know, the penis has many functions. So the clitoris is pretty damn important for pleasure. And I think men would do very well if they understood the clitoris and especially their partner's clitoris, because all kinds of variations occur. Its only function is for pleasure, but they wanted, what year was that? They wanted you to remove.
That was in the late 80s.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I thought it was even sooner, but no.
Or the mid-80s.
Mid-80s.
Yes.
Well, then you went on to make lots of sex education films starting in 1991. Isn't that right?
No, starting a lot earlier than that. I made my first film in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was one film I did want to talk about when we talk about young children. There was a Danish book written in 1972. It was an illustrated book called The True Story of How Babies Are Made.
Oh, yeah.
And I spoke to the author about 10 years ago and said, could I take this book and make it into an animated film? And he said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 4.5-minute film. And this book is used widely in Denmark. Well, I remember showing it at a conference here, and a high school teacher came up to me and said, do you think this film is suitable for high school? Meaning, is it too advanced? So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So,
and I recommend that film, which is prominent on your website, Sex Smart Films, to a lot of my clients who have small, you know, children who are 5 and 6 years old, to go on your website and to watch the animated film, because it's a great opening for
it's sex
education.
And one of the things I recommend when you're watching a film with your partner or with your child, when you're watching it, you each have the film is a tool, and your tool is to be used to open discussion, to educate yourselves about this particular issue in the film. So I think a valuable part of it is both knowing that during the film, you're allowed to press the pause button. And
right.
When you press the pause button, you can ask a question, you could ask, what do you think of this? Or you could say, hey, I don't agree with this. This, you know, and use the film to learn. And you'll find films where you think something's misinformation or you disagree with it, but use that as a teaching moment.
As a teaching moment, yes. And what kind of feedback have you gotten? Because I've gotten some nice feedback from parents that have used it.
Oh,
but tell me what you've heard.
I've heard, one parent told me that their child came home from school one day and said, do babies really come from the stork?
Mm-hmm.
And the mother said no, and she hemmed and hawed and thought about it. And then she used this film and talked, and the child, really asked a lot of questions and was very interested and couldn't believe that someone told them that babies come from a stork. So, but there are parents today who are still saying that.
It's amazing, isn't it? There's so much misinformation about sexuality, and even among adults who watch porn. One study showed that men who had erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, and I've asked my clients about this who suffer these problems, and when they say, do you have these problems when you're watching porn and masturbating? And they say, no, never. And, of course, that's because they don't have to worry about pleasing the fantasy woman on the screen. The fantasy woman. And even adult men don't seem to realize, a lot of them, that this is fantasy. This is entertainment. This is not real sex.
I was going to say, it's interesting,
yes,
having been in, I remember being in Denmark, and the Danish television, you see lots of nudity and things about sex, and I remember being in a home, and there was a 5-year-old boy, and he was watching television, seeing the sex, and actually the nudity, and there was no problem. All of a sudden, the mother grabbed the boy and covered his eyes. A scene in a TV show where there was violence came on, and she didn't want him to see violence. so she covered his eyes. And I was thinking, it would be just the opposite here in the United States.
Absolutely. What a shame. What a shame. And, yes, our children, our teenagers, our young adults are exposed to way too much violence. And, yeah, that's a very interesting story. And that happened in Denmark, huh?
Yes, it has. And I've heard other people tell, you know, when I've told that story to people, in fact, I was talking to a Danish couple, and they looked at me like, of course we don't let our children see violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And they don't have gang problems as much as we do, and they don't have teenage pregnancies, unwanted teenage pregnancies.
Well,
you said that at the top of the show. The rate is much lower.
Well, I remember being in Sweden and seeing a police officer, and he didn't have a gun. And I thought,
A lot of difference. You know, it's kind of interesting just to think about the differences. I'm going a little bit afield, but not much.
Go ahead.
About male and female brains, and you know, in terms of the guy watching porn, and you know, a lot of men have pretty high sex drive, and the higher levels of testosterone cause the guys to think about sex a lot. And so it turns out that the preoptic area of the hypothalamus, the part of the brain that makes men and women feel turned on, is 2.5 times bigger in men and contains twice as many cells. So that is the preoptic area of the hypothalamus. So it's one reason they say men are so visual. And it's little details like that, and
well, what can confirm that? I used to work for a company in North Carolina called Sinclair, and I produced a bunch of films that are sexually explicit.
And I narrated several of them.
Yes, and.
Sex education, we ought to make that clear to the listening audience. Sex
education
films. They
were instructional films.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what was amazing to me is here we have these instructional films that were advertised all over the country in men's magazines, women's magazines. The large majority of the people who purchased them were men. Now, I'm not saying women didn't purchase them, but the sales from Playboy magazine were far greater than the sales from a Ladies Home Garden, you know, and the women's magazine. So,
right.
But the other interesting fact was when the men got them home, many of them watch them with their female partners.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, and I recommend to a number of my clients watching, well, the two that I narrated volume, well, I've done more than two, but Great Sex for a Lifetime, and they are supposed to stop the film, pause it. This is good for any film watching. You've already mentioned it. Stop it and talk about it. And I think it can be argued that simply watching a sexually oriented film with a lover is a really good step in the right direction of when communication is a problem. It generates communication.
Well, absolutely.
And, yes.
If you're dealing with a sexual issue, it's much easier to talk about that couple up there on the screen than talking about you and me. And if you see something that pertains to your sex life and you pause the button and say, what do you think? Or let's talk about this. It's like a home tool. Mm-hmm. And by the way, all these films that we're talking about are available on sexsmartfilms.com.
So, yeah, well, that's a good segue. Let's talk specifically about your website. What year did you start that? Was it about 2008 or something like that?
I started it 11 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And
I started with 46 films. Mm-hmm. And today I have 615 films. And we talked
wow.
about some of the children's films, but we have the most popular sex therapy films are the Sensate Focus films, which was
right.
developed, that exercise was developed by Masters and Johnson. And we produced the same film three times. Once with two heterosexual couples, once
mm-hmm.
with two gay couples, and once with two lesbian couples. The scripts are identical except for the pronouns. So,
right.
And they're still widely used.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's a very common exercise that I, as a sex therapist, Sensate Focus homework, give. And I like it that, yes, that you have done it. I've had clients watch that on Sex Smart Films. And to see the heterosexual couple, the lesbian couple, the gay couple. And, you know, we know how important touch is, and touch can be transformative. The power of touch can restore relationships. And I think you mentioned this in one of our conversations. Well, somebody did, that sex workers often will say that their clients mostly want to be touched. They want to have a conversation with a sex worker too. They're dying for that sort of emotional intimacy, so-called, but they really want to be touched.
Oh yeah. The importance of touch. I remember years ago I knew a woman who did surrogate work.
Mhm.
And a man called her up. His son was in an automobile accident and was in a hospital and wouldn't get out for months and months, and he became suicidal.
And
he talked to the surrogate and said, could you visit my son once a week?
Yes.
And that turned his son turned around after that. And he felt like he was not a human being anymore. And being able to have a sexual life really invigorated him. So,
of course, yes.
Ever since I heard that, I have so much respect for surrogate partners.
Absolutely. I mean, me too. I've known some surrogate women who are so sensitive and lovely and intelligent, and I had a very disabled client for a number of years who worked with a surrogate and had a very nice outcome in that he lost his virginity and he was just so happy to understand that his. Even though his body wasn't made for walking, it was made for orgasms, that he could have that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the statistics are pretty interesting that there are about 77 million U.S. adults who have a disability. And the CDC defines a disability as a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more life activities. So when your sexuality is impaired, that can make such a huge difference. I mean, that's a lovely story about this and how enlightened of the father to get a sex surrogate. I also had a female client with a disability, and she said that one of her problems was it was tough to overcome. She said it was tough to overcome my internalized belief that somehow I'm undeserving of pleasure, because society generally believes people with disabilities are sexless and desire-free. And that's really unfortunate that we have this attitude in our culture.
And I think, I know as far as the professionals go, that they are trying to turn this around. But it's not an easy task.
No, it isn't. And maybe this can be a segue into your documentary. Although, I want to just finish up with Sex Smart Films a little more. And I'll put this in my write-up, of course, sexsmartfilms.com. It's so easy to navigate. I went on it again in preparation for this show. And, boy, Mark, you've done a great job with how fast everything is. And it's so well organized. And
Well, thank you.
I knew that, but I haven't checked it out for a few months, and it seems better than ever. And good for you for having such an outstanding website.
Well, we keep adding films, and we keep making improvements, and we take suggestions from our viewers, and we have a feature where viewers can upload their own video. And there's a 24-hour period where I get to review the film before it goes live, so making sure it's appropriate.
Yeah, interesting. So you have sections, education, research, and therapy.
Yeah.
And I think one has to get a little, for some of the education, and you have some people back in the 70s and 80s who, and even earlier, who are important sex educators. So you have to get a little bit past the hairdos of the time and the clothes.
Well,
but the information is solid.
Well, I also, there are people who want to see the evolution of sex education. In fact, I have one film, and I say, before I show it, I said, here's a review of the film. I want you to tell me what you think it's about. And one line in the review says, "This is absolutely disgusting." So I say to the group, what do you think's in the film? And you should hear what they think is absolutely disgusting. And then I tell
what
them, the film was made in 1897.
Oh.
It was made in Thomas Edison's studio, and it's called The Kiss. It's 20 seconds long, and it's a Broadway couple, actors, and the man turns his head and kisses the woman on the cheek. In 1897, it was illegal to kiss in public. And this review came out, and I thought, we've come a long way.
We have, thank goodness.
But I have the historical sex education films, the films that just show male and female anatomy, and their drawings, they're not live action. We have a film for women called The Home Economics Story, and it teaches a woman how to cook, and it talks about the menstrual cycle, and by today's standards, it would not go over very well. There's another one called Boys Beware, and it shows it was made in the early 1960s, and it shows a boy hitchhiking in California, and he gets picked up by a man who was a homosexual. I remember showing it to a group, and one of the guys said, "I saw that when I was in high school." And so most of the films were either about biology or about disease. Mm-hmm. And then it was in the later 1960s that they started making films with explicit sex. And they, Ted McElvain, who passed away recently, started sexual attitude reassessment programs where you would look at these sexual, right, you would look at these sexually explicit films and talk about the behavior in them. So they made a wide range of films dealing with sexual behavior, and all those films were in 16 millimeter. So our technology and our sexuality education has evolved over the years. Then we have a category of research, and we show different researchers who've done actual sex research. You know, we talk about Kinsey. I have the first interview with Alfred Kinsey that was done on the Today Show in 1956. And
how did you ever get that, Mark? That's amazing.
Through the Kinsey Institute. I had given them. So.
All right.
So, and some of, you know, if you're interested in the history, I mean, and I am.
Yes.
It's just amazing. I look at, during World War II, the federal government made two films on syphilis, one for the white troops and one for the black troops. And I look at them. And, yeah, I look at those, and they're both on the site. The white fellow was overseas during World War II and got gonorrhea from a prostitute and passed it on to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
In the black film, mm-hmm. the fella goes home on leave and gets it from a local young lady in his hometown.
Mm.
So it's just a big contrast, and quite frankly, it's kind of racist. So,
well, kind of. Yeah, it sounds.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But then we have the sex therapy films, and we have films that were made from the 1970s. The first Sensate Focus films. We have the new Sensate Focus films. We have films on erectile issues. There's a book written by Joseph Lo Piccolo and Julia Hyman called Becoming Orgasmic.
Back in the day when I was in graduate school for my master's.
Well, you read the book. Now see the movie. We have the film that we did that follows the book.
Yeah. And Becoming Orgasmic, yes.
Yes, and that was a big deal, that the first Becoming Orgasmic was done in the 70s, and we have both of them on the site, but here it was recommending that a woman who was not orgasmic use a vibrator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and it's quite successful the message is you can learn to have an orgasm.
Yeah. So. And back then, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because we didn't talk about it very much then, and a lot of women would fake orgasms because they were so frustrated.
Yeah.
And it actually, studies show that as many as 60% of women have faked an orgasm at some time or another. And of course, the reasons for faking orgasm are complex. But it's a bad thing to do. I mean, it's not good for the relationship because you're breaching some trust issues. And... You're at a very naked level of vulnerability, and it's apt to seep into other aspects of your relationship if the woman is faking orgasms. Better to learn how to have a real one. And in my experience, using a vibrator is often the way that a woman learns, by herself first.
Yes. Well,
and setting the scene and doing all of those things.
And that's what the book and the video portray.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I had one of those films, Becoming Orgasmic, and I loaned it to a client, and I never got it back, but I remember it was...
You can go to sexsmartfilms.com and watch it.
Mark, talk a little bit about the pricing on the website.
Well, if you want to see one Sensei Focus film, you could pay 99 cents and watch it. If you want some of the longer films, are $2.99. If you want a one-month subscription, it's $16.99, so you have 24 hours a day access to 615 films for a month. We have a three-month subscription for $34.99 and a one-year subscription for $99.99. And then we have institutional subscriptions where, for example, many universities will buy a subscription so all the faculty can use it. So,
and I bet you have a lot of people from universities making use of it and even suggesting to some of their students as homework that they watch a particular film.
Well, many of them show the film, you know, they have projectors and they show them in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and some of them have them watch them at home, but many of them use them in the classroom and then discuss them. Yeah. So,
and that's such a good thing to do, to get discussion going. And
you know, one of the areas that is very popular now are cross-cultural aspects of human sexuality. And I have about 250 condom commercials, HIV public service announcements, breast cancer public service announcements, and others from 52 different countries. And they show the different spots, and you'll see the European countries, their spots are more graphic than the American one. You know, the European countries in a condom commercial show a condom. You will never see a condom in an American condom commercial. And I remember once being at a meeting, and I saw a representative from Trojan, and I said to him, you know, I've looked at some of your commercials and I never see a condom in it. And he looked at me and said, with good reason. I said, tell me the good reason. He said, if we put a condom in the commercial, it'll never get aired in the United States. So
Trojan, and I've talked to some of those people at past conferences, so they must make more than one commercial, one that can be shown in Europe, especially in the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, yes, but the ones shown here in the United States,
right?
They can't. And there's one from Kenya where you actually see a condom get unrolled, not on a penis, but you see, and that's the only commercial I've ever seen where you actually see how a condom is unrolled.
Mm-hmm.
Very good one. It's called The Umbrella. So if you
The Umbrella.
In fact, what I'll do, I'm going to put it on the homepage. On the homepage of Sex Smart Films, there's a free video.
Mm-hmm.
When we get off, at the end of the show, I will put The Umbrella on the homepage of Sex Smart Films so you can watch it just to see what I'm talking about.
And I encourage those of you listening to check out Sex Smart Films. It's an amazing site because Dr. Mark Schoen has taken the time and he has the expertise and the technical expertise and all that to gather so much information into one spot. Historical and research and therapy, and it's amazing what you've done with this.
Well, thank you, Diane.
It'll be a big part of your legacy, Mark.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about, because we only have about 15 minutes less than that, because we have to stop a few minutes before the top of the hour. So let's talk about your documentary, Love After War. And we've talked about it before on this program, but you were saying to me, the importance of the documentary is to help healthcare professionals learn more. And you told me a story about an MD at Walter Reed Hospital. Would you share that story with our listening audience?
Yeah. I think the important thing to remember is some people criticize healthcare professionals because they don't talk about sex. But you have to realize that they've never been trained to talk about sex. Most physicians aren't. And the ones who do have taken it upon themselves to get some training. So there's a physician at Walter Reed Hospital who treats soldiers, people who've been in combat, who are in comas. And he says when they come out of a coma, the most common first thing they ask is, and quote unquote, how's my junk? They want to know how their genitals are. Are they okay? And mm-hmm. can you imagine being in a long-term coma, and that's the first thing that comes to their mind? And he says that is the majority of the men want to know that. And I've seen another experience where we have one young man who joined the Marines when he got out of high school. And he was in a training drill with 52 Marines. They were gassing them on a hot summer day, and they were putting their gas masks on. Well, the field that they were being gassed caught on fire, and the 52 young men are running, and all of a sudden he sees one of his buddies has fallen and is on fire. He runs back to rescue him. He picks him up, and he catches on fire.
Yeah.
He rescues the man, but he gets burns, second and third degree burns, over 80% of his body, including his face. He's being treated by a medic, and he says to the medic, did I get burned down there?
Uh-huh.
And the medic says, I don't know. And he said, well, please, look. The medic pulled down his pants and said, no, you didn't get, there's no burns between your waist and your thigh. And he went, oh, thank God.
And here he is in pain and shock. But that was his, that's what came out of his mouth. Am I still okay there?
So it demonstrates the importance of intimacy, of sexual health. So this film is trying to show this, demonstrate the importance, and show how these people were treated. So we have everything from severe physical injuries to two fellows were paralyzed and are in wheelchairs. One woman was hit in the back of the head by an American, knocked out, raped. She's blind and deaf.
Oh.
We had to use a tactile interpreter to hear her story. We have another woman who was in the army in Germany, and her commanding officer told her he wanted her to report to his barracks at 7 o'clock that evening. And she said, what for? And he said, just be there. She knocked on the door. He opened the door. He was smoking grass. He brought her in, and he raped her. And I asked her if she reported this. And she looked at me. The look she gave me was, that was the stupidest question I've ever heard. So I said, tell me. She said, this mm-hmm. was my commanding officer. Who am I going to report it to?
And it's shocking, and it echoes so much of what's going on in our current climate, doesn't it, with
yes.
the Me Too movement. And I just heard on the radio news that Bill Cosby has been sentenced to jail.
Yes.
And
deservedly so.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in about 2 weeks, I'm going to discuss with Sherry Winston the whole idea of consent, because that
yeah.
we need to have lots more discussions about that. You know, I when I was getting my 3,000 hours back in the early 80s so that I could become a licensed marriage and family therapist, I worked at the VA in Menlo Park.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that was a different time. In fact, PTSD, they didn't call it that. I worked in an inpatient ward for substance abuse. And some of the men in our group had never really had sex sober. So there was a lot of heavy drinking and addiction to heroin were the most common substance abuse problems. But from their earliest sexual encounters as young men, they hadn't had much experience of being in the moment and being alive and aware uh-huh. of what was going on with themselves and their partner before and during a sexual encounter. So there was a lot of sex education that went on. I gave lectures at that VA, and because they needed information. And
well, that's important work.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. And if I had more time, I'd go back to do that. But I love promoting what you're doing. It's this documentary is an ongoing process. And
if anyone wants to see a clip, if you go to loveafterwar.org, you can see a little clip from it. But it's a film that I think will be important in the fact that most of our military people come, they get treated for their physical injuries, they get treated for their mental injuries, but no one asks them about their intimate life.
No one does. Very few VA hospitals have staff that can deal with that, right?
Right. Walter Reed Hospital has a small group that is dealing with it, and
mm-hmm.
that's in Bethesda, Maryland. So,
isn't there also a VA hospital in, I'm thinking, San Diego?
I think there is one in San Diego. There are lots of VA hospitals, but Walter Reed is, you know, not part of the VA.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, that's different. So that's different.
Yes. So.
Yeah. So, what has it been like? It must just filming this show and planning for it. It must be very emotional at times.
Well, I've been making films for many, I've made over 50 films. This is the first time while doing interviews, I started crying.
Yeah.
So some of the stories are, you know, here we have these young people who are patriotic, who are risking their lives for all of us.
Yep.
And they're not getting the kind of treatment they deserve.
Right.
And I'm not pointing a finger. I'm saying we need to start training people to deal with sexual health so our people can go on and have the quality of life that they had before they went into the military.
And it may not be quite the same, but at least they'll realize that they still can have some form of sexual functioning and sexual pleasure.
Yes,
even if it isn't intercourse. And yeah, this is very, very important to get this documentary out there and for training purposes, because it is amazing how we don't have very much, many people don't have very much information about this. So I'm going to hear the music of my show, which means that we've gone almost an hour. So I want to thank you. Is there one final thing you'd like to say, Mark, kind of as a wrap-up?
You know, I encourage you, if you have a sexual issue, if you need sex information, seek it out. There are lots of resources, including sexsmartfilms.com. That information is a key to sexual health, and it's out there if you reach for it.
Absolutely. Sort of a parallel thing to remark on, and I'll do it quickly because I think we're going to hear the final music. A study was done about sex therapists. Did they have better sex than most people? And in this small study, it turns out they did, because sex therapists had sex with less anxiety because they had so much knowledge. Knowledge is power, and that's right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Didn't the Sinclair Institute have sort of something like that? Knowledge is power? Didn't they say something like that?
Yes, and I'm trying to think. I don't remember the exact words, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, having accurate sexual information is the key to a good sex life.
It really is. And I think that Sex Smart Films is just an excellent way to get a lot of information, or specific information if they're after that and they can navigate the site so easily. You've really done a wonderful job with that, Sex Smart Films. And the movie Trans, which you talked about earlier in the show, I understand that trans, which is fabulous for transgendered people, where the suicide rate is the highest, it's, isn't it on Amazon Films? And
it's on Amazon
people look
Prime,
at it
yes.
there? Prime, Amazon Prime?
Yep, so you can watch it for free there if you belong to Amazon, and it's on Sex Smart Films. So,
right.
Yep,
right.
Places.
Well, so Amazon Prime, you can watch it free, huh?
Yes, if you're a member.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you, Mark, very much.
Thank you, Diana. Bye-bye now.
And we'll have you back. Bye-bye.
Un calibro affascini il tuo cuore. E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Ma i tuoi piedi in capo. Happy feet, da da da, 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 happy feet, oh, I.